Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, John Wirth, I'm here. It's this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast. Our guest is Patrick Muratoglu. He is a tennis entrepreneur. He owns a namesake academy. You probably know him best as coach of Serena Williams and of Coco Gauff. He's a commentator. He's also the commissioner of the UTS. What is UTS, you ask? It is the Ultimate Tennis Showdown, which is one of these unsanctioned events that's occurring during COVID. This event is happening June 13th through July 12th at the Muratoglu Academy on the French Riviera. Players include Stefano Tsitsipas, Matteo Berrettini, David Goffin, Benoit Paire, Richard Gasquet. So this is another one of these events that's going on while there are no tour events. So we talk with Patrick about UTS, but also a bit about tennis in 2020. He made some news this week when he talked about how tennis needs an overhaul, how the audience is getting older. And we talk about some of the possibilities and plans there. He was we recorded this, full disclosure, on Wednesday, a day before apparently there was a press conference. So he was a little bit coy about revealing the specifics of UTS. But it does sound like he's going to unveil some of these innovations that that he talked about in vague terms. So this is a good conversation. We agree on some things, disagree on others, but I think you'll enjoy the next half hour or so. So here's Patrick. Where are you? How are you?
I'm at my tennis academy in south of France, and I'm good. I'm very busy because we use that down period to be as creative as possible.
Well, we'll talk about that. You also you look like you got a haircut. That is
I actually did yesterday. You have a good eye.
Very good. You're the lucky ones. So you have you have a big week ahead of you. We were talking actually on Tennis Channel just an hour ago about UTS and some of the players that are going to be in the field. What's the objective? I mean, it's the players need to play and events need to happen. Why'd you do this?
I do this because I feel that tennis needs to reinvent itself. I know when I say that, it sounds a bit too much, but I'll explain why. The tennis fans are getting older. The fan base is getting older. Nothing against old people, but at a certain point, any fan base has to be renewed. If it's not renewed, people are getting older and older. At some point, it's not going to work anymore. And when your fan base is 61 years old and gets 1 year older every year, you have to start to worry and try to find solutions. So I try to understand why we were in this situation. I realized that, first of all, people feel that it was better before, and that's what I hear every day, and you probably hear the same, by the way. People tell me this every day. It's simple. It was better before. Okay, so I ask why, and they say because we had better personalities before. And I think that it's not true. I think we have great personalities in tennis, but I think they don't dare anymore expressing their emotions and expressing who they are. It's all about being politically correct all the time. So it's not very fun for new fans, not very appealing. And we get rid of a lot of diversity of game styles, diversity with the young players, very young women being in Grand Slam finals that we don't have anymore because of rules. All this is because of rules that have been put in place. Rules to prevent young players to reach the finals of the Grand Slams. Rules to, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but we destroyed and get rid of the serve and volley players, for example. This is because of rules also. I mean, the uniformization of the surfaces and the code of conduct, which is rules also, that get rid of the diversity of the personalities on court. And the personalities are very polished now. And I think it affects the show. The game of tennis is incredible. The show of tennis, I think, is very old-fashioned. And the goal is to bring the best from the past and also to be more modern in the way to showcase tennis, taking into consideration how people consume videos and sports and anything actually today.
Right. The American cliche is that there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, I think... To what extent are you differentiating between when the ball is in play and when it's not? Because I'm looking out there and I'm seeing, you know, I saw a 16-year-old, and I will call her a girl and not a woman. I saw a 16-year-old girl addressing a crowd about an issue having nothing to do with tennis. And I see a 39-year-old man is going to get knee surgery but continue playing in 2021. And I see a much more racially diverse and nationally diverse sport than I did 20 years ago. I would push back on some of that, but I think your point when the ball's in play, I think is a much different situation. I mean, when do you think we lost this? When did we lose these fans?
I think, first of all, I think the game is extremely slow. I think a tennis match is a marathon. You have to sit down and have almost food for the next 3 hours, if not more. And to ask a 15 or 20 or even 25 or 30 years old to do that, this is not going to happen. So that's a big problem. This is about the format. And more than that, it's long. Plus, it's very boring for a non-fan. For a fan, it's fine because the game is in itself is enough. For me, I'm fine. I can watch 3 hours a match and I'm happy. But for someone who's not a tennis fan, you have to realize that the time that people don't play is much longer than the time when people play. And when they don't play, they're basically doing this with the towel, they're bouncing the balls, they're choosing the ball. I mean, this, nothing's happening. This lasts so long. People wait all the time. Sometimes there is no break for almost a set, so nothing's happening. And the players are flat, their behaviors, they all behave the same. There are a few exceptions, but aside a few exceptions, most of them behave the same all the time, and they don't give anything, no emotions, nothing. So for a non-fan, honestly, today, and I don't even talk about how complicated is scoring, how complicated is the ranking system, and for a non-fan, it's almost a no-go 20 times before they get into tennis. So that's exactly the goal of UTS. Get rid of all those no-goes. Create a format that is much faster, dynamic, surprising, because that's how people consume videos and formats today.
So how? I mean, I think we're in agreement. I mean, I look out there and I see, you know, the number one highest paid female athlete is the Japanese Haitian who lives in Florida. I mean, I see terrific product when the ball outside of the matches. And I don't know if you have this too. I mean, people say, I love Serena Williams. Oh, she's my favorite. And then you realize these people have never seen her play. When they say, I love Serena Williams, they love what she stands for. They love following her on social media. They love it when she's on The View. They've never seen her hit a tennis ball. So I mean, keep going with specifics. How do we, once the match starts, how do we make this more telegenic? How do we capture this with video better, and how do we bring in younger fans?
So basically the match has to be much shorter. There has to be a lot of things happening and not only two guys hitting tennis balls. I think that, like in a good movie, You have different personalities. You have a story. You have different actors. You don't have only two actors. You have several ones. You have first role, second role, third roles.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this. All right, so we want coaching.
That's not the only thing, but I'm not supposed to give the too much details because we do it tomorrow night at 7 in the press conference, so I'm not supposed to give some details. So, but basically, you bring other people on board in the match. You create events within the match, and you surprise also. In tennis, you don't surprise. I mean, there is only Kyrgios and Benoit Paire who surprise. Nobody else is surprising anything. So, and I don't want only Kyrgios's. Would be boring also because we would know exactly what's going to happen. We just don't know when. We want different personalities. We want diversity. So I agree with you. There are many more colored people than before. That's true. But the game styles are not as diverse as before at all. Not at all. The game styles. The young people... Sorry, but they're not going to play Grand Slam final because the rules are too... that's the whole point about the rule, to prevent them from doing that. So it's not going to happen. And the personalities on court are very standardized. So I think that's what's interesting about human, like, that we're all different. So if you serve the same person, there's no story. Actually, if I may make a comparison, I would say that a tennis match is a movie with only... person in the movie that are nice, well behaved, they don't do anything wrong, and they're extremely politically correct. So there is no story. That's what tennis today. And that was not like that in the 80s at all.
I was gonna say, I mean, do you think we're romanticizing we're talking about the tennis boom when a lot of these fans first got into tennis, right? So we're talking about whatever you want to say, you know, 76 to 86, right? The 80s. Do you think the sport was significantly different then versus now? I mean, are we romanticizing, or do you think it really was materially different with the cap?
No, it was completely different.
Why do you say that?
Just watch this TV show called The French, 1981. You probably watched it.
Oh, right. The Verite, the documentary with yeah.
You can compare. It's day and night. No, I think the players were very easy to identify. They had really strong personalities. You had the Borg, you had McEnroe, you had Connors, Gerulaitis, Nastasi. You know, all those guys had such strong personalities, and sometimes the personality was to be calm. Huh? It's not only crazy people. That's what I'm saying. But they were... And they were sharing much more their emotions with the crowd on the court. They were going through all their emotions, and they were showing that. So they were engaging the crowd.
So do you think the athletes today, I mean, let's say we relax the code of conduct and we encourage players to express themselves. They still go on their phone and it's, you know, Patrick, you're such a jerk, and emojis and memes. Do you think even if we relaxed every disincentive in the code, players today would want that role, that with social media and with commercial pressures, you think players would respond differently than they do now?
I think in a way you're right. I hear a lot of nonsense. I mean, that's my opinion. Like people and agents saying, oh, you can't do that. It's bad for your contracts. And I sorry, but I have to answer. You want to talk about Kyrgios contracts? You want to talk about McEnroe's contracts? What is this? This is not right. No, this is not true. Right. There is nothing worse than to be nobody. That's the worst. And I don't think it's right either to try to be somebody else. And I love this quote, be yourself, everybody else is already taken. It applies perfectly to tennis. They try to play a role. And it's what I think is hurting tennis is the lack of authenticity. That's why I said I hate when they hug themselves at the end, because they don't mean it. They just want to look good on TV. Most of them. Sometimes there is a reason, but once in a while, not every match. And I knew when it started that it will be every match. And now it's almost every match they hug themselves. I mean, they want to beat the other guy. This is unauthentic. Right. So I think we should bring back authenticity. So now will the players do it? I think we have a good chance, even though a lot of people are saying wrong things that are not true. And there is a pressure from the sponsors. That's true, too. I can tell you because I know. Don't do that. It's not our brand. I mean, sorry about your brand, but this is me. I mean, you have at a certain point, you can't think only about the money. You have to also accept to be authentic and be yourself. And this has to be explained to the players. It has to be explained to the players also that the greatest star of the history of our game is John McEnroe and is nothing like flat. Nothing. Nothing like politically correct. So this is not true. It's just about finding your own image that reflects who you are. That's what it's about, more than trying to be perfect. It's like, it's almost a competition to be the most politically correct. So it's so boring. It's clones. I hear clones. And you know I'm right.
I'm surprised to hear you say that. So let's keep going with that, though. Where does the resistance come, right? We always talk about what can we do to change the sport and to speed it up, and maybe we drop best of five sets, and maybe we have a real, I mean, I totally agree with what you're saying. The dead time between points is just lethal. If you're my teenage kids, you have lost them the minute you spend 30 seconds bouncing balls and going for towels.
Exactly.
Where's the resistance coming? Who is opposing this? Who is, you know, you're saying we need to change and evolve and adjust, and I think most people would agree. Where does the resistance come so that we've had this conversation for years and years and not a whole lot has changed?
I give you just one figure. I had my people work on the time played during a match. You want to hear the result? How much time played compared to the non-played? So they did it on three matches. Federer, Berdych, they played 15% of the time, 1-5, huh? The whole match.
Well, balls in play for 15% of the time of match.
15.
Right.
That's crazy. Nadal, Correa on clay. Nadal, Correa on clay, 22%. And Kalovic, Anderson, 6%, as you can guess.
So where is the resistance coming, though? I mean, who is opposing this? Who are these traditionalists that we keep hearing about that don't want to change?
I'm not pointing fingers at anyone. I'm just the only thing I can say is that I think it's difficult for the ATP and the WTA to make any change because the fan base of the ATP and the WTA are guys who were on board in the 80s, and it's still the same people. They're still here. They're still the fans now, today. Because they're very loyal to tennis, and among them, a lot of them like tennis the way. And in general, people are against any kind of change. So probably for ATP and WTA, it's difficult to take the risk to lose their fans. They have no guarantee that they're gonna get new ones, because they're not for the moment. So they stick to their fans, and I completely understand it. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm thinking, well, they can do it. I understand it. I can do it. I have no fans, so it's easy for me to start from scratch and propose something different, and we see if it's appealing or not enough to the younger generation, and if we succeed. If we succeed, there will be we have to find a space for both formats, and that's it.
So I mean, you're being coy about what we're going to see from UTS, but you think this is transferable to tour events? I mean, you
100%.
These are
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You mentioned technology and video. What can tennis be doing different in that respect?
A lot of things. I mean, I prefer that you see UTS and you tell me what you think about it. I mean, it's not the ideal version I would like, because we didn't have a lot of time. But it's, I mean, it's nothing compared to ATP and WTA. It's completely different. But I think UTS 2 or 3, so the next and then the next showdowns, will be closer to the final product, I imagine.
You have an event with, you know, top flight players, but very few of them. What do you think of a 128 draw major tournament in 2020? Should we still be talking about the U.S. Open and French Open? Would you like to see that happen?
Of course. I am a tennis fan, so I love Grand Slams, and I want Grand Slams to take place.
Under these circumstances, though, you'd like to see these events held?
I don't know how it's going to look like. I don't want them to look bad. That would be really terrible. And I don't think they can happen if the top players refuse to play. And that's what it looks like for the U.S. Open from what I heard. So if the top guys don't play and it doesn't look good, I mean, it's the U.S. Open. I mean, I wouldn't show a bad image of the U.S. Open. I mean, it's not a big deal to wait for one more year. I mean, there will be in the history, there will be 1 year without U.S. Open and.
Right. Well, significant revenue loss, but.
We all understand why they try to make it.
I want to ask you how big a deal to the players you think it is not to have fans. I mean, so Serena is an obvious example who, wherever she goes, she's playing on the big court, on TV, in front of, you know, sometimes 20,000 fans. What do you think the role of the fan is going to be in these events that, you know, for the rest of the year and maybe even Australia, we may not have fans in the stands. What's the impact of that?
So we found a good solution, I think, at UTS, you'll see. I mean, it's definitely a big, big extra to find the motivation to play your best. I think players adapt to everything. That's the number one quality of a professional tennis player, adaptation. So I think they will adapt. I think they'll know they'll be live on TV all over the planet. There is an opponent in the other side of the court that is a good player. They will find the motivation. But for sure, the event is better with the crowd. I'm not going to say that it's better without. It's not true.
What do you think is going to be the hardest part for the players when they come back?
I don't think it's going to be hard. I think they'll be so excited.
You do.
I tell you because I see some here and they're playing next in a few days. And I mean, they're different because they have a goal. Tennis player needs goals. They used to have goals, short-term goals, all their lives. They have a tournament next week or the week after. So this is the thing that gets the motivation to do these extra things they need to do every day at practice to get ready. When you don't have that, it's extremely difficult. I can tell you, I see the difference with the guys here. Once they knew they were playing at UTS, they knew they're going to be live all over the planet. They know they're going to play some great players. Suddenly, boom, they know what they practice. Intensity, motivation, goes to the next level. So I think as soon as they know they have tournaments and they know when, they'll be fine.
Right. No, I mean, players after players say that's been the hardest part about this period, that we don't know when we're coming back. We don't know what surface. If you tell me just to start running and you don't say it's a sprint, it's 10 miles, it's 15 miles. If you just say start running and we'll tell you when to stop, you don't know how to pace yourself.
Exactly.
What else have you learned? So you have players at the academy right now. What else have you learned about tennis players in the last 90 days?
What I just told you, that if they don't have a short-term goal, it's extremely difficult for them. They're almost depressed. They live like that all their life with this kind of, this kind of pressure that they have to be ready for the next one. And this pressure helps them do the job well to get ready. And if they don't have that pressure, they don't even know why they step on the court. It's a thing that I've heard a lot. Why do I go on the court? What's the point? Maybe I'm not going to even play this year. What am I doing?
I want to ask you, respecting the professional relationship, I want to ask you about Serena, who's a player that obviously a lot of people are wondering about. She has a gap in her schedule and she gets to be a wife and a mother and stay off of airplanes. she also has a gap in her schedule. And, you know, at an age where she probably wants to play all the majors she can, how's she holding up, and what are we expecting there?
I think she's fine. I think she needed rest anyway, and she would have taken rest. So she had the rest that she needed. Took a few weeks off doing nothing. I mean, nothing physical, doing a lot of things, but on the side, her daughter, of course, her family and her businesses. And then she started to just get back in shape, doing fitness, and lately tennis a few times a week. And I know the goal is just to have the body still get used to the sports and the tennis in particular. And then we're going to go more specific as early as she knows when she's going to play next, like every player. And I think she's fine. And I think to have had more time to rest is not a bad thing for her.
And she says, Patrick, they're going to play the U.S. Open, and I'm going to may only have to take one member of my entourage, and I may have to be in the airport hotel for 2.5 or 3 weeks. On the other hand, it's a chance to win this 24th major. What do you tell her if she asks for your input?
No, I will tell her to go 100% for sure, even without me, if she wants to go with her daughter, but someone has to take care of the daughter. No, but definitely she should go.
You think she should?
Oh, 100%. 100%. She has goals, so anything that can get her closer to her goals is a positive thing for me.
So UTS kicks off. I'm looking at the field. I see Tsitsipas, Berrettini, Goffin, Gasquet. These are top flight players. What do you expect from them? I mean, you're being very coy about the format. We're gonna have to hear your press conference to get the specifics. But give us a little sense of what we can expect.
I mean, I spoke to them individually 30 minutes before they enrolled, because I wanted to be sure that they were excited about the format and they really wanted to do it. And the feedbacks were super positive. I think they're excited to do something different. I explained to them that we're trying to find the best format for the future of tennis. So they're young. I mean, not all of them, but even the not the young, even the older ones, they were thinking it's fun, it's different. And it's competition, and we play great players, so it's only positive. So they were easy. What to expect? Very fast, a sprint rather than a marathon. A tennis match will be a sprint with us. Things are going to go fast. Everything's going to be fast. Everything's going to be exciting. Everything's going to be emotional. If you are a tennis fan, you have to look at that, because you'll see tennis differently. And if you're not a tennis fan, you'd better look, because maybe you're going to like tennis now.
That's really the goal here, to bring in these casual fans.
100%. You have to propose them something that they can like. So we try. I mean, I'm not saying we know. I'm just saying we look at the issues that tennis has and the hurdles that new fans would have to climb to get into tennis. We take those older hurdles. We take them out. We propose a format that is more interactive, more fun, more emotional, more faster, and we hope they will love it. And if not, we will make more adaptations, and we'll get the right format. And for me, it's something we build all together. I'm happy and interested with your feedback, or anybody's feedback who knows tennis well, who has a sense of what the fans would like. And and that's what I said to the broadcasters also. We do that all together.
I it sounds, you scared me there in the beginning, I got to tell you, because I see tennis, I think the format needs an absolute overhaul. I watch my kids when tennis is on TV, and it's just not realistic. They're going to sit there and watch, and there's dead time. You and I could argue about the code, but I look outside of tennis. I look not, you know, at the time other than the match itself, and I see this wonderful cast from around the world that's, you know, from ages 16 to 39, and it's men and women and international, and you know, Novak's talking about vaccinations, and Kyrgios and Murray are on Instagram. I mean, I think one of my frustrations is that the players and the cast of characters are great, and then when it's showtime, it's exactly what you said. It's a bland movie once it's actually showtime, but once the movie's not playing, you love these guys. So it sounds like you and I are in a similar place here.
I think so. I feel so. just one thing about the code of conduct, 33 pages to tell people. So even on the ethic, I'm shocked. I'm shocked that it basically tells people how they have to behave. This is unacceptable for me. Unacceptable. They can tell them you can go that far or that far. This is fine. But in this in the middle, there is a space where they should be able to behave the way they want. You know, we're humans. Nowhere else on the planet you're not allowed to be yourself. That's the tennis court is the only place.
And you, I mean, just to end here, and you think players would do this? You think with social media pressures and agents, you think players would take advantage of that if this code of conduct was relaxed?
If there are more guys than me who are saying the same things, that it's not true, that it's going to hurt their image, I think it's exactly the opposite. I think it's always better to be yourself than trying to be somebody else. I think that people love to share emotions when you share your emotions with them. Of course, some people will dislike you. That's true, too. But a lot of people will like you. And I mean, I think Serena is a good example.
Right.
Because she's very emotional. She brings her emotion. And that's also why she's so popular.
Right.
Of course, because she's the champion she is, but also because of that, I think.
And
she's
and
very human on the court. She's crying. She lets her emotion go, flow. And she's human. And when the other ones look not human.
And she's in a position where she doesn't have to deal with back. You know, she's reached a level where she doesn't have to worry about backlash. But that's a good. But your points well taken.
Okay.
Yeah. Good luck. This is great. We're gonna send feedback.
Thank you very much.
All right. Pleasure as always.
Thank you, John.
Take care.
All right. Thanks to our guest Patrick Baratoglu. Always a pleasure talking with him. One of these. Forces of good in the game. And you agree with him on some matters, you perhaps disagree with him on others. He cuts a bit of a controversial figure, but he wants what's best for the sport, and yet you have to respect that. Again, the UTS kicks off June 13th and goes through July 12th, and then it sounds like we might see Patrick in one capacity or another at the US Open. So anyway, we thank him for his time, and we will be watching UTS. If you guys have comments, good, bad, or indifferent, we would be happy to forward those to Patrick since he asked for feedback and we believe he's sincere. Jamie, let me bring you in. Thanks as always for your producer excellence. I want to ask you, Jamie, from where you sit, I don't want to say how bad is it, but what do you make of tennis and this stagnation that Patrick referenced?
I think it's a two-part answer. As you said, I think we agree with Patrick on some parts and not on others. I think the idea of whether it's a faster paced format or a little bit more of the times way for younger fans to interact with players. We see this a lot with the NBA, for example, who has done a lot with innovation within the game and really trying to attract, you know, a younger audience, whether it's on TikTok or whether it's the ability for fans to, you know, interact during matches, whatever it is, we've seen that. And I think, you know, he's right to say that we should have tennis be a little bit more of the times in that way. But I also have to say that, especially in the past few weeks, I think the young stars of the game have really spoken up and carved out a place for themselves. So to say that there's no appetite for a younger audience to engage with tennis, I think it's a little bit wrong, because I don't think the only way a younger audience is going to engage with tennis is through tennis itself. I think all of the off-court things that happen with the players and the game will also help. And I think players like Coco Gauff and others who have really shown us their off the court personalities and interests and passions in these past few weeks will kind of help to carry that going forward.
Can I make an out there point?
Sure.
Tell me if you agree or disagree. I think overall, I agree with what he said. I mean, again, when the ball is in play, if we're just talking about the format of tennis from, you know, balls in play, we're warming up to match point, I agree a lot can be done. I really take issue with what he was saying about players lacking personality and not having color, literal or metaphorical. I mean, I thought that was a strange remark to make, especially for
a guy who coaches the players he does and works with the players he does. I would put today's cast of characters against the 70s or 80s or certainly 90s any day of the week in terms of sort of collective character. But I think his points were well taken about when the ball's in play. The one point I would make is I just think a lot of this is how we consume sports these days. And I mean, I remember when Michael Jordan used to play, I would watch an entire NBA game. I mean, I love the NBA. I covered the NBA for years. I cannot tell you when the last time I watched an NBA game. I mean, baseball to me is unwatchable, and yet I can still be a fan and follow it on social media, and I can follow the players, and I can watch highlights. I am not sure there are that many sports fans. You know, the UFC might be an exception where the fights at a maximum last 25 minutes and at a minimum they last a matter of seconds. Take that out of it. I'm not sure sports fans in general watch sports that much anymore. I mean, we know about the ratings. We know about the NBA ratings. We know everybody loves the NBA. Everybody's an NBA fan except for the inconvenient fact that nobody is watching the games anymore. I just think the whole experience of being a sports fan has moved from watching games to following athletes on social media and following some of the feuds and the disputes and the memes and real Rex Chapman. I just think that, never mind tennis's average age of a fan going up, I just don't think a lot of sports fans watch sports as much as they used to. I mean, I think this is really I don't think it's a problem either. I just think it's a viewing habit. It's a consumption habit that goes way beyond tennis. So that's a sort of a filibuster, but I don't disagree with him that kids today are not sitting down to watch a best of five tennis match, but I'm also not sure they're watching an NFL game from the first quarter to the fourth quarter or an NBA game either. So anyway, that's just my two cents.
No, I mean, it's a bold statement to say, but I get where you're getting at. And that's sort of what I was saying, that I think the tennis players of today are, as you said, just as interesting, or if not more interesting, both on and off the court. I think that's the benefit that social media and the 2020 era has given us with athletes, is that we're seeing these different sides and we can interact with them differently. And that's what keeps us, interested when they're on the court or off the court. And so, as I said, I think the younger players, you know, are going to carry that. And I think as they grow up, the younger players that come after them will use them as the example of how they should carry themselves when it comes to off the court issues or even on the court. You know, I think we saw it with Naomi Osaka and Coco Gauff, and their moment that they shared on the court. So I think there's a lot to learn there, but I do agree that the lack of a prolonged attention span for sports that you kind of alluded to definitely exists. And that's why I said that some of the changes that he spoke of, whether it's a faster paced format or, a little bit more interaction between fans and players or whatnot, is something that I think that the game could probably use in order to fulfill, a fan's desire of today.
I'm really eager to see his event and the innovations or the tweaks or whatever you want to call it about the UTS. Clearly he has some proverbial tricks up his sleeve that he was reluctant to share. I agree with him that something needs to be done to the format. And it's also, don't take my kids as an example. Look sometimes at a match and notice even in the players' box, these are the people who in theory have the most emotional investment in the whole stadium in this match. Watch how many of them are looking at their phones when the camera pans to them. I mean, again, I'm not sure it's reasonable to expect even the most hardcore invested fans to sign up for 3 hours of a ball going back and forth, especially with towel breaks and ball bouncing. I do wonder what you thought about his remarks. I mean, what do you think, Jamie, about this U.S. Open? That, again, it is whatever today is, June. Time is completely fluid, by the way. Time is like
June 10th.
June 10th. On June 10th, we still have a U.S. Open. We have this conversation every week, and the we have some plot shifts, but no major changes. As of now, the U.S. Open is on. No fans. Very unclear. We certainly won't have Roger Federer, who's shutting it down for the year. Unclear, though, which players will be in the draw and which weren't. Patrick, obviously, is very much encouraging Serena Williams to be there. Where are you right now on the 2020 U.S. Open, Jamie?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I mean, Patrick didn't really take the bait on your question about Serena, but he said that he would recommend her to go, which is fine. I think you brought this up in your mailbag this week, but there's no guarantee that these players are going to go. And now, of course, we know that Federer is shutting down his season for the year due to the injury setback. We've talked about this, and this was something I mentioned way back when at the beginning of this pandemic, but I'm not sure if, you know, the big three and Serena and others decide not to play. I'm not sure if we still, you know, can call this tournament a major or how the players will feel about going to a tournament that maybe doesn't have the competition that they're looking for. We also talked about just the general idea of players going and what they have to go through in order to string together that set of matches in order to win, and how amazing it would be for that player to overcome all of the things that we've all been experiencing for the past few months and still come out on top and still win the U.S. Open. So I'm not sure. I think, you know, with the PGA Tour starting tomorrow, I think even the golfers have commented, you know, that it would be really weird to hear crickets after a crazy hole-in-one shot or something. And I think that tennis players, of course, would have a similar feeling there. But the bottom line is that without fans, it's across the board. Everyone's playing without fans, so it's going to be weird for everyone, and the adjustment back to play is going to be weird for everyone. So I'm not really sure if it's the best idea to do it, but as you said, we have not heard otherwise. So I remain on the fence with mixed emotions.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all have mixed emotions, and there's just we all want tennis back. The USTA just had terrible job cuts. You know, that's no good for anyone. We hate to see that. We want to see players back to earning a living. We want to see fans back to being entertained. We want to see racket stringers and coaches. I mean, there's a whole tennis microeconomy that's been stalled here. The flip side is, boy, does this seem like a strange way to get your sport back. And I don't know what happens if the stars don't play. I mean, Federer's out. Rafa Nadal, Djokovic have been something other than enthusiastic. Ash Barty has intimated she ain't crossing an ocean to play the U.S. Open. I don't know what this, you know, if this tournament has the field of, you know, a 500 event, I'm not sure who that benefits.
Right.
I mean, I guess I have mixed feelings. I mean, we were talking on Tennis Channel, I don't know if you saw Danielle Collins had some unkind words for Novak Djokovic, essentially saying, like, don't be a baby. On the one hand, you were so great in this relief fund, and now you're not going to come. The number one player in the world isn't going to come to the biggest event when tennis needs to get back because you can't bring your entire entourage. A part of me says, you know what? Like, Djokovic can do whatever he wants, and if he doesn't feel like playing, you can't blame him, and it just means somebody else is going to get his spot in the draw. But the flip side of that is, if star after star after star pulls out, what are we left with? And is ESPN going to be happy with that? Is the USTA going to be happy with that? Is the tournament even going to happen if, you know, if there are two top 10 players in the field, which I had heard by one count is where we are right now. There are two guaranteed top 10 players, and the other eight are either on the fence or are nose. Can you still call it a major and hold a 14-day event?
Are you thinking that that's going to be the case as well for the French Open, or are players having a radically different outlook when it comes to Roland Garros in the fall?
I would say, for a variety of reasons, radically different outlook. I mean, one of them is just simply that the nerve center of tennis is in Western Europe right now. and nobody's crossing an ocean, I have not heard that the tennis players are all going to have to essentially quarantine in the same hotel as they are in New York. I mean, right now they're talking about all 256 singles players in the same airport hotel, so they're not in Manhattan. It's not like they can go to Central Park or their favorite sushi place. I've heard that if they run out of toothpaste, someone's got to go get it for them. They can't leave the hotel. This is going to be very strict. Again, that's at the U.S. Open. I think if you're watching the news about Western Europe, it does not seem to be quite as restrictive. You know, again, I mean, Roger Federer, I think I said this last week, Roger Federer is 3 hours by train from Paris. Rafa Nadal is, you know, a 75-minute flight. Djokovic, probably an hour flight. It's much different as far as travel to get there. But I think the fact that I haven't heard anything about the entourages at the French Open, but I've heard nothing about this kind of everybody in one hotel and in between matches you can't leave. I think there's going to be a lot more freedom of movement in Paris. So I think again, June 10th timestamp, I think the French Open, probably a greater likelihood of occurring and definitely a greater likelihood of having the kind of field we're accustomed to at a major.
Right. I mean, that makes sense. I think the French Open might start to have those very specific discussions that the US Open is having right now about whether it's hotel sharing or quarantining or whatever it may be. Maybe we're just not there yet. And maybe they're waiting for another tournament to maybe test out the waters a bit. But yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I just, there will be players who have to cross an ocean, but to your point, the majority won't have to. So it will be interesting. Again, still mixed emotions here on whether or not New York is ready for this and whether or not the US Open should take the leap and make tennis the experiment for a grand event like this.
It's seems like a high risk proposition. But you know, I mean, I do think we also need to look at it from all different angles. And one of them is the marginal tennis player. One player had a good point. They said, listen, if I win one match at the US Open, that's almost $100,000. That covers my year basically. And it's been a very rough year financially for most players. And Danielle Collins made this point in her post. I mean, the top stars are worth, you know, nine figures, and their grandkids don't have to worry about their college fund. I mean, they're set for generations. You don't go too far down the ladder, and the player on the other side of the net has really been struggling. So if you're ranked 65 in the world, one match, one best of three match if you're a woman, one best of five match if you're a man, and you can basically salvage this financial wreckage of 2020, I get why those players want to play, and I get why there's pressure on the USTA. And again, I mean, it's very unfortunate. I think everybody gets a wide berth. I wrote this in the column this week. If nothing else, I think it's a wonderful exercise that tennis has started to think in such imaginative and fairly dramatic terms. This is a sport that, you know, whether the stupid shot clock is 25 seconds versus 20 seconds constitutes a big innovation. So it's great that we're really innovating now. But yeah, I'm still feeling very ambivalent about this US Open, and I feel like a lot of fans are as well. Crazy times. I suspect, Jamie, when we talk next week, we will have a little more clarity. But you know what? These days, who knows?
Amen to that.
All right. Thank you. Thank you as always. We will have another guest next week. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks Patrick Muratoglu. Jamie, as always, does great work. And leave a review, subscribe. It always helps. iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold. And have a good, healthy week, everyone. We'll do it again in 7 days. Thank you.